Want five-star service from a financial institution you can trust? Whitney Bank has you covered. With nearly 200 locations across the Gulf South and products for businesses of all sizes. Learn more at HancockWhitney.com. Member FDIC.
Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. And by Business First Bank, with locations throughout the state, including 11 offices in the Baton Rouge area, providing personal and commercial banking, treasury management, and wealth solution services to help clients succeed. Business First Bank, banking with greater momentum. By Schuert & Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas.
From Mansur's on the Boulevard in Baton Rouge, we're out to lunch with editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report, Stephanie Regal. It's business, Baton Rouge style.
Here in South Louisiana, water is as much a part of the local landscape as is solid ground. And with coastal erosion, the ratio is becoming more skewed every year. Fortunately, environmental entrepreneurs are figuring out ways to help us deal with our water and coastal issues while also building viable businesses. Take Tyler Ortego. He's the founder of Aura Estuaries, which uses engineered oyster reefs for coastal shoreline protection. The company got its start in the LSU Business and Technology Center and uses a developing technology that Tyler developed called oyster scaffolding. As its name suggests, it involves growing oyster reefs in strategic locations where the coastline is eroding. And we know there are plenty such places along the Gulf Coast of South Louisiana, and Aura Estuaries is partnering with local communities to help them grow their own oyster reefs into the building blocks of coastal protection. Tyler is an environmentalist, an engineer, and an entrepreneur who got his start with the Shaw Group, went out on his own in 2006, and now has his own successful growing company. Tyler, thanks for being here today and sharing your story with us.
All right, thanks for having me.
Ron Malone is also an environmental engineer who created a water filtration system more than 30 years ago called Bead Filtration. That system is now the basis for several products sold by his company, Aquaculture Systems Technologies, or AST, which handles a wide range of filtration needs for a variety of industries, including aquaculture and fish hatchery systems, home koi ponds, and wastewater filtration, among others. More than $10 million in research has supported the advancement of Ron's technology and associated aquaculture systems, and his patented products are used worldwide. Ron, it's a pleasure to have you here on the show. Thanks for joining us on Out to Lunch. Well, Tyler, I'll start with you. Where did you get the idea to use oyster shells for your scaffolding?
So this all started off as a student project at LSU. It's getting to be a long time ago.
We love those kinds. These are the best.
The idea was that it was a challenge to sort of replicate a natural process that's being lost.
So
globally, oyster reefs are as imperiled as coral reefs, and they're just as important to the environment. And they naturally serve this function of keeping wetlands intact. Mm-hmm. So one of the tactics that the state has been using to hold the line on a wetland shoreline is a rock dike. You can go out and see them pretty much anywhere you go. And there are some specific challenges with that, and we came up with a way of growing oysters to ideally prevent that from happening. And that was sort of the first step on this journey of letting the oysters do the work. So they're pretty amazing creatures. They're really prolific. They make these big heavy shells. And as an engineer, when I see big heavy calcium carbonate shell, I'm thinking free building
Perfect.
Material. Right.
Right, absolutely.
And so we're trying to use the way their biology as a tool.
So is it difficult to get them to grow?
It can be, yeah. It's the first generation.
How does it work, I guess?
All right, so the basic idea is that when oysters breed, they make millions of free-swimming larvae, and they move around the water column. When they get big enough, they'll find something to attach to, and they start growing out that shell. So they literally glue one half onto whatever they're growing to, and they build this calcium carbonate rock shell. And then they grow on top of each other in successive generations. So we're making a three-dimensional shape. It's sort of depends on the eventual end use of that shape.
And do you start with any sort of foundation or like chicken wire? I mean, I'm just
visualizing that. Yeah, we're starting with a precast concrete structure, so it'll probably weigh several hundred pounds.
Okay.
And then we're trying to grow 1,000 or more pounds of living oyster onto that.
Wow.
And so what we're doing is we're taking out the risk that you're not going to get an oyster reef, right? So we're starting it in the best possible place to grow an oyster reef, and then moving it into these shoreline projects.
Ron, speaking of technology, you created this bead technology. It's patented technology now. I envision little beads in the water. How does that serve as a filter? What are the beads made out of, and how do they work?
Well, the beads that we use are polyethylene plastic, which is actually produced here in Baton Rouge by some of the big companies, chemical companies.
Okay.
And they float. And we basically create essentially a sand filter, although it's upside down because they float. And then we grow bacteria on them at the same time. So we develop a filter that acts like a sand filter, takes solids out, and at the same time grows bacteria that purify the chemicals out of the water.
That is fantastic. And you need that bacteria. This is good bacteria, I guess, or it does good things.
Yeah, bacteria are generally good from our perspective, yes.
And so why is this bead better than some sort of carbon filtration or sand filtration or something?
Well, the bottom line is we're trying to make water filtration more cost effective. Mm-hmm. And the industry that we started in was the aquaculture industry, and that's a very cost competitive industry. And so the cost reduction was the principal objective we were trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And we also create very good water quality at the same time, so we're not sacrificing that, but we're trying to get the cost down.
So where is it used now? I mean, it's used worldwide, but what specific types of projects?
Well, so we do tank-based fish production systems,
mm-hmm.
Shrimp production systems. We do salt water. We do fresh water. We do zoos. Anytime you have an animal around the water that's going to be in the water, they produce a lot of what we call organic load, and they require the bacteria. So that's one thing that's unique about our filter, its ability to capture solids and have the bacteria working for it at the same time.
Fantastic.
And then more recently, we broke it into the area of wastewater treatment. We've done groundwater remediation.
Hmm.
And that's sort of our thrust right now, is to expand in that area.
So that was my next question. I mean, are there thoughts of moving into municipal, water treatment?
I spent the last 4 days drawing some large municipal treatment units. The state is in the process of upgrading its ammonia discharge limits across the state. Mississippi is doing that also.
Mm-hmm.
And this filter is particularly good at removal of ammonia from the water.
That's fantastic.
So we have 3 or 4 jobs in process and a couple installations coming up this month.
In like towns or cities?
Yeah, the North Shore, for example. All the wastewater treatment plants in North Shore are being driven to higher standards as we speak, and to protect Lake Pontchartrain and the tributaries that go into it.
Y'all are both doing such interesting things. Who is your competition out there, your respective competitions? Is anybody else doing this with oyster scaffolding? Tyler.
Really, the competition, I guess, is kind of inertia in the status quo. People have been, when we started with oyster reef shorelines, people were protecting shorelines, people were growing oyster reefs, and never quite came together. And then what we're doing now is hopefully taking another step in terms of output and cost efficiency.
Mm-hmm. So there's no other company doing exactly what you are.
Nothing like that, no.
Interesting.
The downside of that is, when you have competition, it means somebody's already buying, right?
Sure.
So we're sort of creating something from nothing.
And you have to educate the market? Or, is it a fairly easy sell? It would seem like here in South Louisiana, people would glom onto that idea pretty quickly.
It's coming together better.
And what about you, Ron? Who's the competition for AST?
Well,
bead filtration. Now, it's been 30 years. Somebody else has got to be doing it. Huh?
We haven't had another bead filter producer come up and hold. We've had numerous competition come and disappear. And I think that's due to the science that we put into our designs and that type of thing. It's rather rare. We try to think of this as a new tool for existing wastewater treatment companies and for existing companies that produce filtration, as opposed to something that puts them out of business.
Sure. Right?
So it's a new tool. Direct competition are monstrous. We compete with sales with Pentair, for example, which mm-hmm. is one of the biggest wastewater treatment companies in the world. They're producing a bead filter right now. And all they also sell ours, so it's sort of a strange world.
And so you were telling me you do your R&D here in Baton Rouge.
That's correct, at the Innovation Park south of campus.
Okay, and then your corporate offices are now in New Orleans?
Denver is sort of our sales center, mm-hmm. and my brother is a co-owner is up there. And then in New Orleans, we have our assembly center.
Yeah.
And then we produce in Lake Charles. Most of the fiberglass units produced there. Rotor molding, we do them in three different states, a lot in Texas, some in around Colorado, and I think the other is Illinois. There's yeah. production there.
And so how many states are y'all in? How many markets, I guess?
Well, with
your
our
products.
Internet, there seems to be no bounds. But we're actively engaged, for example, in South Korea, where we're doing flatfish production. China, we have three or four units going into China.
Fascinating.
We're doing a lot of business in California, which has much higher water quality standards, so they need the extra muscle in their water filtration.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
What about y'all, Tyler? You're newer, much newer, mm-hmm. obviously,
yep.
but...
We've had products through a licensee deployed in Louisiana and Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I've got leads from Texas to Florida that have been working, focusing on the Gulf Coast right now.
Yes.
There should be plenty of that type of work on the East Coast as well.
And do y'all have employees, or is it pretty much just you and?
It's just me. Company that four of us own that owns the patents. They're scattered around doing their thing in various places.
Okay. Ron, what about you? You've been around a good bit longer. Y'all must have quite a few employees by now.
We have about a dozen full-time employees,
mm-hmm.
and then we have about a half a dozen students that work with us associated with the university.
And are they the ones doing the research?
Is mostly done by students either in the university or just leaving the university.
And I guess, when you come up with something like this bead filtration system that really works, what kind of research do you have to continue to do, I guess, to stay competitive, to be sustainable?
The water quality area is very complex, and so we're constantly doing analysis, chemical analysis. This is a generic filter that applies broadly across a wide different applications, like I said, all the way from zoos to wastewater, and each one of those requires specific design adjustments.
Yeah.
So we're endlessly doing that.
Okay. Can you talk about what kind of revenues y'all do, or just a rough general idea?
The company that we have, ASD Filters, does between $1 million to $2 million a year in sales of filters.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Tyler? Do you are you all to a position yet where you have revenues that you can talk about?
The oyster scaffold's a bit of a reset for us. So it's like a startup. So,
mm-hmm.
I think I'm getting close, but not there yet. So I've been doing some engineering consulting to keep the lights on.
Okay.
And we've got some other innovation in the works that's still conceptual right
okay.
now.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Stephanie Regal. We're talking with Ron Malone of Aquaculture Systems Technologies and Tyler Ortego of Aura Estuary. Well, we're going to take a little break for a minute, switch gears, and do a segment that we call The Best Advice. And, everybody has somebody who's given them advice before, or a buddy or a brother-in-law who's always telling them what they should get into, or, a good deal for them, or a great career path they should pursue. Can you remember a time when somebody gave you advice, and did you follow it, or how did it turn out?
So you meet all sorts of, working in coastal restoration, you get all sorts of very colorful ideas on what you should do or not do. But probably the most useful thing that people are happy to share with me over and over is to focus, right?
Right.
Stop coming up with all the new things and execute on what you got. So.
What about you, Ron?
Ironically, most of the advice I'm getting now is from my students.
Okay.
I was at LSU for 37 years, and the academic environment is a unique environment, and it's very focused, and making money on the outside and surviving as a business is a totally different problem. So I find myself calling up my students that graduated 15, 20 years ago and asking them for advice on what to do right now. And I'm listening very carefully.
That's very good. And that's funny, because I did want to ask y'all about that, because we see that, you know, a lot on a show like this, when you have people that are skilled in the arts or in the technical sciences or engineers, that doesn't necessarily translate into business. How have you all sort of bridged that gap or made that transition from being a scientist by training and temperament into being an entrepreneur? Or have you? We're still trying to figure it out, maybe.
So I guess in the last 5 years, going through or been associated with a number of business incubators and accelerator programs, and so you sort of get a real crash course in looking at all sorts of different aspects of business.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, some of it is just, you know, school of hard knocks, right? You make the mistakes and learn from them.
Sure.
Well, I'm lucky. My brother started a business about 20 years ago in his garage, and it sold recently for $120 million.
No kidding.
A kiosk system is right at the right time. So I just call him, or he calls me more often. My baby
brother.
That's
where the best advice comes from. What kind of business did he launch in the garage?
He was doing originally point-of-sale systems. If you can remember, before barcodes, he was in the first wave of engineers trying to get that adapted, and he moved into kiosk systems, which are the computer boxes that we see in the airport.
Interesting,
in the stores. And he was one of the top four producers of kiosks in the country.
Wow, that's so great. What's the market like here for workforce? I mean, Ron, you mentioned that you use a lot of students in your research. But I mean, have you had any trouble recruiting or finding people to run the company? Or?
Well, I live right down street from the source of all the people, right? So I have no trouble at all.
That's great. I call my
professor friends and I say, what's the best student you've seen in the last 3 months in this area? And then I get a phone call usually the next day, and I generally hire the person that's recommended.
That's great. How do you all advertise? Or have you yet? Is it word of mouth? Is it?
It's more. We have a very narrow group of people who are making decisions on these projects and how the money's getting spent. So it's a matter of getting in front of them as often as possible. So a lot of meetings. You know, there's lots of opportunities to be in the same room with a whole group of different agencies or consultants, elected officials, and whatnot.
I wanted to ask you this, Tyler. I mean, now that we have some BP oil spill money to pay for coastal restoration projects and a master plan by the CPRA, are you able to take advantage of any of that, or are we hoping down the line that will help?
We're getting there. So the opportunities in Texas were to use some of their spill money.
Some of their spill money for your
project. And the checks started coming official in 2017.
Right. So it's brand new.
Yeah.
No, I'm aware.
Takes a while.
but you think that there's potential for you here in Louisiana?
There is, yeah.
Okay. How do you advertise, Ron?
Our main focus is advertisement through the internet. If you go on the internet and you talk about koi ponds, fish tanks, wastewater, water filtration, then we haven't done our job unless our ad pops up.
Okay.
And that's been why we're so widely, our markets are widely distributed, that we get blind calls just from internet. We're making a big push now, starting to push on YouTube illustrations.
Okay.
Again, we have 8 or 10 different markets, so you can imagine the number of tech support we have to get
up there. And it seems like if people could see it in a video, that would make a huge difference, helping them understand what exactly it is that you do, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, well, that's great. Have you all had to go to market yet to get any sort of financing? Do you have investors?
Well, I have the single investor, which is my brother. And the company, when we acquired it, already had an established market, so it was already operating. We will go to investors when we broach sales in the order of about $10 million a year.
Okay.
And,
but not ready for that yet?
No, I think it's probably a year to a year and a half early for that for us.
have not yet been bootstrapping, and I think there's a lot that we could do before we even have to ask for that investment. And it's kind of a coming through these business incubator programs. It doesn't fit the capital model that they're mm-hmm. promoting. You know, we're not a tech company. We don't have $1 billion a year business opportunity, and so you just have to take a more measured, slow going approach to getting it out.
Sure, sure.
Come up with some plans that maybe, you know, we need policy and regulations to catch up.
It seems like your idea is just so perfect for a pitch night competition. It seems like it would be so much fun to sell to people and to.
It's done great on pitch nights.
It does, because everybody can relate to it.
Yeah.
But it's harder when you get in front of the serious investors, maybe.
Right. Well, again, you know, the investors expect to see revenue and turnover, and working on government contracts is you can't predict from year to year. You know, even though we've been following certain opportunities, like, yeah, we think we can get some product into this one. Are they going to get the project out the door to bid in 2017, 2020? You know, nobody loses their job when the
right.
You know, if it doesn't come out fast enough, and. That's just the nature of it. There's not enough volume to go to that investor and say, mm-hmm. look, we're gonna return the money in this period of time.
Yeah. You had said that you were hoping to take advantage of CPRA money, you know, state money for coastal projects. Are there private deals you would hope to get? Like you said, you're working with a private landowner in Leeville. Do you eventually see your revenue coming from government and private sources, or?
That's a great question. The private sources, at least in Louisiana, you've got these big coastal landowners with massive tracts of wetlands, and they're primarily oil and gas companies, and they're the ones losing most of the mm-hmm. land. They're the cost is too high, and I think they're the cost of losing that land isn't high enough, and so we've really got to adjust the economics to get them doing, and that's part of where we're continuing to work on the innovation side is, you know,
right.
how do you really radically change the economics of protecting coastal resources.
How long does it take to grow these oysters?
So a market size oyster is probably a year and a half to 2 years old.
And so to grow a scaffold that's going to make a difference, is that all?
2 years will get us enough mass on there to use it as an engineering structure.
So that's kind of a while.
It does take a while, yeah. So there's a risk component to that. And, I'm addressing that by working, instead of showing up with the inventory to sell, is working with the agencies to say, look, we're gonna walk with you through this process, kind of like contract farming, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as we hit the milestones, we'll get paid, and then you'll get your product out of it. So the end result, you're gonna get all this ecological restoration from the oysters that we're growing, and your shoreline protection will be 75% of the cost of what it was, you know, if you'd have done a more traditional product.
Interesting. Very interesting.
So that's the next step there.
How do you all find South Louisiana as a place to do business?
Well, I think it's a great place to do business. I'm actually a California boy from
Are
way
you
back
really?
When. And I've got grandchildren in Denver, and a brother wants to move up there. And I just don't think we can beat this environment down here.
What about it?
Well, number one, we have people that really work hard. You know, if I can use the term swamp people, because a lot of our people from LSU are out of the swamps.
Sure.
They're used to a rough life, and they're used to working hard for the money. And that you can't believe how much a difference that makes when you're trying to do work. And I think that the regulation levels here in Louisiana and Texas next door to us
mm-hmm.
Are at the about the right level where you can set up a new innovative company without getting bogged down with a lot of paperwork.
Interesting.
And so I think, for example, I see on the TV all about the Rust Belt, and I think part of the Rust Belt's problem is the development in the South.
Mm-hmm.
That if you go down I-10, it's hard to move around the 16-wheelers.
Yeah.
It's so much industrial activity down here.
And easier to do business here, say, than in California, your native California, where I guess the regulatory climate is a lot less friendly.
Well, it's more stringent, and they're much more advanced than we are, for example, in environmental regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess some of that is good and some of that is bad, right? I'm an environmental person. I believe in environmental protection. It's an excellent place for us to sell a product. mm-hmm. because their standards are very strict and they need the
And they
product.
Need what you make.
That's
but it's
correct.
Easier to be based here and to sell there.
Well, because of the work environment, that's yeah. correct, yeah.
Interesting. What do you find, Tyler?
I don't have as much experience for comparison, I guess. Born and raised here, right down the road, live in Metairie now. It seems like maybe if we spent more time in Houston, we'd have better access to the oil companies, since that's where they all went. Otherwise, I'm in a 20-minute drive to an international airport. I can get wherever I need to be pretty easily.
Yeah, that's good. Where do you hope to see your company in, say, 3 to 5 years? What's your long-term plan? Or maybe that's a medium-term plan, I guess.
Yeah, so really working hard at getting a few of these oyster scaffold nurseries established in the Gulf Coast and building some capacity in the company. So having being able to have the field biologists to go out and do the biological sampling and the sediment cores and all that. And then by 3 to 5 years, I'd like to have a really one-of-a-kind, unique data set on how oysters grow and assimilate nutrients and respond to the environment.
Mm-hmm. What about AST? Where will you be in 3 to 5 years, Ron?
In 5 years, we should be a $100 million a year company. That's clearly our objective. We're striving for nothing short of that. And the industry that we're trying to penetrate, particularly the wastewater industry, is massive. So even though that sounds like a large number compared to our current competitors,
right.
It's very small. So that's what we would say is a recognition level
yeah.
across the country. So
that'll be a lot of growth in 5 years.
My brother, who's already gone through that once, says that growth is chaos, and I can pretty much verify that for him, and that's the way it's been.
Well, good luck as you embark on this chaotic growth period. Ron Malone and Tyler Ortego, it's been great talking to y'all and meeting environmental engineers who are also environmental entrepreneurs. We appreciate all the good things you're doing for the state and the environment. Thanks for joining me on Out to Lunch.
Thank you.
My guests today on Out to Lunch have been Tyler Ortego of Aura Estuaries and Ron Malone of Aquaculture Systems Technologies. You can find out more about Aura Estuaries and Aquaculture Systems Technologies by following the links on our website. It's batonrouge.la and wrkf.org. Today's show is recorded live over lunch at Mansur's on the Boulevard in Baton Rouge. Mansur's is open for lunch daily from 11 to 2, for dinner nightly, and for brunch on Saturdays and Sundays. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Our associate producer is Peter Ricciuti. And our Baton Rouge business consultants are Charlie D'Agostino and Ann Edelman. You can see photos from this show on itsbatonrouge.la and on our Facebook page. These photos are taken by Ken Stewart. All the music on Out to Lunch is composed and performed by Mitchell Foreman. You can find more of Mitchell's music wherever great jazz is streamed or sold and at mitchellforeman.com. You can get this show as a podcast, you can listen to past shows, and you can keep up with us on all kinds of social media by going to our websites. It's batonrouge.la and wrkf.org. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsbatonrouge.la and WRKF 89.3 FM. I'm Stephanie Regal. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to meeting you again around the table here at Mansur's next week for more business Baton Rouge style on Out to Lunch.
Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base, JonesWalker.com, and by Business First Bank, with locations throughout the state, including 11 offices in the Baton Rouge area, providing personal and commercial banking, treasury management, and wealth solution services to help clients succeed. Business First Bank, banking with greater momentum. By Short & Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas. Out to Lunch is recorded live over lunch at Mansur's on the Boulevard in Baton Rouge. Mansur's is open for lunch daily from 11 until 2, for dinner nightly, and for brunch on Saturdays and Sundays.
Want five-star service from a financial institution you can trust? Whitney Bank has you covered with nearly 200 locations across the Gulf South and products for businesses of all sizes. Learn more at HancockWhitney.com. Member FDIC.